This is Sarah Sharp, and you're listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
You're listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, changing rock history one podcast at a time. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, and we have with us today a special artist interview with Sarah Sharp. And Sarah is going to be talking to us today a little bit about her music and how she got started and why she's so passionate about it. So that's all coming up in a minute. But real quick, before we get too far into this, I want to tell you that our website is LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Check back often for more podcasts with different artists. The ones that you like, please hit that little share button on your favorite social media app, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever one you like, and let the world know about the artists that you really care about. That's how music gets promoted here in the second decade of the 21st century. So do that for us. Share the music around. The artists really appreciate it, and we do too. If you'd like to get some exclusive music, some behind-the-scenes stuff, exclusive video, exclusive conversation, please consider getting in on the Inner Circle. You can go to LouLombardiMusic.com/Inner Circle. That is LouLombardiMusic.com/Inner Circle. And all the details are there for and how you can get some exclusive music and exclusive video. As I was telling you, we have singer-songwriter Sarah Sharp on the line with us today. Sarah, welcome to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Okay, Sarah, where are you calling in from?
Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas. And are you from there originally?
I'm Texan originally. I grew up in Houston, but I've lived in Austin for 19 years, I think. Yeah.
Was it the music scene that drew you to Austin?
Definitely.
Okay. So how did you, what made you get so excited about music? How did you get bit by the bug, so to speak, to, want to really pursue it in such a serious way?
Well, when I was growing up, I had a very big family. My mom was a classical pianist and so was her mother, and they were a big Catholic family. So there were just a ton of us. I have 28 first cousins. And everyone was musical. And I thought that was just the most natural thing in the world. I didn't think that was anything unique or special about me. And really, as a child, my main focus was I was a ballerina. But in high school, I quit. I mean, I decided that I was never really going to totally make it as a ballerina, and I quit. And I joined the high school choir. And that's when I started to realize that not everybody could sing. It was the first, you know, I'd be standing there next to other people singing and wondering why they weren't, like, singing in tune or getting the notes right.
Okay.
And so it became a thing where I was kind of, you know, had a way of standing out and shining. And actually, like, the choir of my high school was incredibly cool. Like, all the cool kids were in it. So it kind of gave me a lot of social advantage. And then I just loved it. And I already had the bug of how great it felt to perform, because as a child, I grew up in Houston. I was part of the Houston Ballet's Nutcracker. So it's like huge production. And I was already used to, you know, late nights on school nights in front of the big lights and all that, and that energetic exchange of feeling the audience and putting that much of myself out there was already very much something that had bitten me.
Okay.
And then realizing that I could sing and that might be a thing that I could run with, I did. And so I was kind of a late bloomer. I mean, I went to Berklee College of Music, but I mean, I had very little of my own. I had never written a song. I had never been in a band. I was just, you know, good at choir.
Okay.
So I've always been kind of a late bloomer in a lot of
things. So when you went to Berklee, what was sort of your focus there?
I mean, I was a vocalist, and it was just a general music degree. Mm-hmm. Like, I chose the path where you get a little bit of everything.
Okay.
It was called professional music. And then I did that, or I was able to do that in 3 years. So like I graduated a year early and then moved to London, and the first bands I was ever in were when I was 21 years old, 22 in London.
Why did you make the decision to go to London? What was there?
Well, I had this amazing teacher at Berkeley my last semester. He was a songwriting teacher. His name was Jimmy Kachulis. And I had not been part of the songwriting department at Berkeley. And I had already, I was basically finished. I had like 9 hours of school left when I decided my last semester to take songwriting one and lyric writing one. And he asked me to come in on his lunch hour or office hour, and said that he really thought I should consider majoring in songwriting. And I told him, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
This is my last semester. That last semester of school was at Berkeley was the first time I wrote a song, and it was terrible. But he just took an interest anyway, and he said, what's your plan? And I didn't have a very good plan for when I finished school, other than I knew I needed to be able to support myself right away. So I was planning to just get a real job and hope to be in a band. And he said, why don't you come back once a week and talk to me? You don't have to bring me any songwriting ideas unless you want to share, but I just want you to talk to me about your plan for when you leave here. And every week it changed. I told him, I think I'm going to move back to Houston. I'll probably just sell insurance because a lot of people in my family do, and then that way I'll be able to afford to be in a band at night. And then I had this plan to go to this island in the Caribbean where I had a free place to stay, and I was going to bring a guitar and be isolated and force myself to learn guitar.
Okay.
And then I had a plan. Each week it changed. And then I went in 1 week, and I told him I have an aunt in England who teaches at Oxford, and she had offered for me to come use her as a home base and stay as long as I wanted, and that I could also travel a little with her because she also had a place in two places in two different parts of France. And I told my teacher, I'm just going to go for 2 weeks and hurry back because I need to support myself. I'm not going to be able to, from the moment I graduate, I am a full-blown adult as far as, being responsible for myself financially. So I'm just going to go experience Europe for the first time. I think I can only afford to be gone for like 2 weeks, and then I'll come back and start my real job.
Okay.
And he had mostly just listened the whole time. And on this day, he was like, he really started talking. He's like, Sarah, okay, where do you think all your teachers are right now? Because my last semester was a summer semester. He's like, they're all in Europe making it actual living, playing music at festivals. That's where you still can. And he's like, right now the government's debating whether to completely dismantle the National Endowment of the Arts or take it apart in these sections piece by piece. But he was going on and on about how our country, compared to Europe, was not was really not doing a lot of things as well as Europe. And he said, you're managing to get out of this school with no debt, you're single, you're blonde, you sing blues, and you're worried about hurrying back to Houston to sell insurance? Just go to Europe, stay as long as you can, you'll figure it out. And so by that night, I declared that I was moving to London, and sight unseen, and I did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a great story. It's very inspiring. So while you were over there, you said that was the first opportunity you really had to get into a band?
Yes.
Okay, so what did that, first of all, how long did you end up staying there?
Not quite 2 years.
Okay, and you played in bands while you were there.
Well, I started with the blues jams.
Okay.
I wasn't a great blues singer. I mean, I have a pretty voice. I don't have a big, big fat voice.
Mm-hmm.
But blues is something where even if you don't know anybody, you can show up and participate.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
And so I used to go to the Ain't Nothing But the Blues Bar every Monday night and, you know, sit and wait for my turn to do my two songs. And then it turned into sort of a community of people I like to play with, and we'd do these other blues jams. And it got to where 4 or 5 nights a week, all around London, I would go to these blues jams. And then that evolved into finding people to really be in a band with, like, cover bands, jazz standard gigs. And that's when I had just barely started to write my own material, because I was certain at that point, having done it just for a little while, that I didn't want to just sing in cover bands. Like, you know, the first stage was, I want to be a singer. The second stage was, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to really write my own material.
Yeah. So when did you start to kind of like really sit down and, you know, be a songwriter and start thinking about producing your own music in a serious way?
It came in stages. Okay. I think the first EP I put out of my own material was like in 2002. And then the first full-length record was 2005. And by then, I guess I was, you know, some of what I was writing was pretty good. But I think there was a massive shift when my third child was born. I had done a whole lot of, you know, recording stuff and living out of my car and traveling with maybe just one guitar player or pianist and playing like the songwriter rooms and crashing on people's couches and really making my, you know, to where I had gotten to where I could play all over the country and some parts of Europe. And then I started having my kids, and I had 2 years where hardly anything happened musically. And then when my second child was born and she was 6 weeks old, a few things happened. I have music supervised some films and a few other projects. And so, there was a film that a friend of mine, Andrea Perry, and I was the music supervisor, but the director was a real fan of my own music, and he wanted us to write a song that was really predominantly featured right at the beginning of the film, and we knew what he wanted, and we wrote a great song, but it was not for my identity or for her identity artistically. It was just serving the project. But it was super catchy, love pop song.
Okay.
And we found that she and I had some real synergy there. And randomly, that song was heard by a music production company that does, like, you know, sort of library music placements. And they reached out and asked us to do 5 songs for them. And I had just had my second child. She was 6 weeks old, and I was just starting to sing again live. For the first time, I had joined a band that was not like singing under my own name, but it was a real niche jazz band, and that was awesome because I didn't have to hustle and self-promote. I could just be part of something and get back out there. And she and I started writing a song a week for this music production library, and it was super liberating because it wasn't about, this is the next thing that I, Sarah, have to show for myself artistically. And it was serving what they were asking for, which was, you know, really catchy stuff, but with integrity. And so we just didn't have to think too hard. We just had to meet deadlines. And the song a week thing became our own discipline. We never knew whether they were going to buy the next batch of songs, but we just kept going.
Okay.
And so, and they kept buying them. So I had a, you know, a 6-week-old and an almost 2-year-old, and I was starting to play several nights a week, and I was writing a song a week. And it just, I don't really know how I did it all, but it was like the more limited my time became because I was a mom, the more of luxury it felt to sneak in time as a songwriter.
Okay.
Like that became a great indulgence.
Yeah, of course.
And so also just that discipline of a song a week. Like every Wednesday I drop it carried on even to when I had my third child. Drop two little ones at Montessori, take the one that's still nursing with me to the studio, nurse him, stick him in his car seat, however long he napped in his car seat, record a couple, two, three, four, five takes, walk away. Andrea does all the arranging and all the instruments. And I just start working on the next song and like no time to think or question. The song had to be finished. And sometimes it was finished the last few missing parts on the spot.
Now, some of these songs have been featured, right, in some like shows and movies and stuff that people would know. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, so I mean, some of this is in other countries, but we've been on The Good Wife. We had a theme song, not a theme song. It was for the TV show Revenge. It was like every time they ran the promo, like Sundays at 7, you know, we have had TV commercials. In China, we had a Dell commercial. In the Middle East, we had a Kia commercial. We were featured for the making of a Chanel spring summer campaign, which is like our most prestigious, you know. But that was like on Chanel's YouTube channel where they did this beautiful film of the making of their campaign. And out of that, we got a ton of fashion placements.
Excellent.
For a while, that was, you know, we've done stuff for Macy's, and I mean, honestly, I have.
So how did you get back to being Sarah Sharp, artist, singer, songwriter?
Yeah, so it's been a long time, and I just got back to that. And what it was I was in a band for 7.5 years called Jitterbug Vipers, which was this really niche 1930s, 40s Viper jazz band. It was really successful and well-known in Austin because it was total, like, keep Austin weird. The Viper culture is like the marijuana culture from the 30s, 40s. So we're singing these jazz songs, but they all have all this drug reference.
Okay.
And all the, like, code words and lingo and then and I'm actually not a stoner, but I was knee deep in the culture. I don't have any problem with other people smoking weed, but I'm not any good at it. But I wrote this record of originals inspired by that culture, and it was a really wonderful, successful thing we did. And the guitar player at the time was a total Austin legend. His name was Slim Ritchie. We just had an excellent run with it. And then he passed away. He died of cancer. So 3 years ago when he passed, I left that band. That band still exists in some capacity, but I'm not in it. And that's when it was time. I didn't want to not play.
Yeah.
And I really preferred to be part of something, but I just didn't find the thing to be part of. So I started getting back and playing my own stuff and writing a lot and just writing as me for the first time in probably like a decade of, you know, instead of writing for this project or writing for this, you know, really niche Viper stuff. And it was a big flood of material because Slim dying was a huge transition point in my life, both the grief of losing somebody that was a mentor and a musical soulmate, and somewhat of a father figure, but also this kind of facing my mortality that brought up, ended up also being an upheaval of my marriage. So I ended up spending a couple years with my ex deciding whether or not to stay married, and we in the end decided not to. So there was a ton. There's a lot of songs. around all of that.
And you have out now an EP that has sort of come.
Okay, so in March I released an EP called Wake, and it's 6 songs, I think. And then in June I released an EP called Dream. And then there's another one coming out very shortly. And then there's a fourth and maybe even a fifth, and it's all already recorded. It didn't all go together, so it made more sense to kind of group these songs together into, I'm sorry, let me make my phone stop ringing. I should have turned my ringer off.
Okay.
sorry about that.
That's all right.
So yeah, I ended up in these different sessions and these different projects and collaborations and some like being recorded in Brooklyn and some here, and then going to Brazil to write with a Cuban guy. And I mean, it just was so many different things that I decided to release these as EPs.
Okay. So, and each EP is what? It's sort of based around a certain what? Vibe? Sound?
Yeah.
Mood?
I think it has more to do with, the first two very much have to do with emotional state and transition and, you know, where I was personally. The second EP is all recorded in Brooklyn, and it was Phoebe Hunt produced it. I only brought one guitar player from Austin, and everything else was her players. And it's some really personal stuff.
Yeah.
And the last song on the Dream EP, I actually wrote with my ex about our breakup. And I had almost finished the song, but I don't play an instrument. So, you know, I always write the lyrics and the melodies, and sometimes I kind of have a bass line or like basic chords in mind, but I love, you know, working with somebody else to make it, you know, finish it out.
Yeah.
And so I asked him to help me finish this song. And in the process of us sitting down to just kind of make a demo, I switched it to be written from his perspective. So these first two EPs are very much about this huge transition for me, kind of stepping into my more adult self and letting go of, you know, what was a very long relationship. I met him in London when I was 22. So we were, you know, kind of babies, and we raised each other, and we're still, we still have each other's back. But it had to transition.
Okay, after all of this and this, what a journey you've had. Mm-hmm. What track would you like us to play? Because you said you didn't want to decide when we first.
Oh well, so yeah, I mean, if this is more rock and roll, then I would think we should play. It's kind of hard to choose between two, but I think we should play. Oh my gosh. Right Through Me. I hope I don't regret that decision, because it's kind of jazz too. But
that's okay. So we're going to go ahead and take a little break here, and the audience is going to check out Right Through Me. So guys, Check us out, and we're going to come back and we're going to wrap up here, because we've kind of explored a lot of different stuff here. So we're going to come back and wrap up after this. But check it out, Right Through Me, Sarah Sharp on the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Pass right through me, then you want some more. Sift right through me, then you want some more. See right through me, then you want some more. You pass right through me, then you want some more.
Oh,
Okay, write through me. Which EP is that on, Sarah?
That is on the second EP, which is called Dream.
Dream. Okay. And so, where are we now in the cycle? We've got Wake. We've got Dream. Is the third one out yet, or is it coming out?
Yes. Well, it's coming out in a couple weeks, and okay. So I still am a jazz singer, and that's very much, you know, probably what most people in Austin think of. Especially because of all the years that I sang in Jitterbug Vipers. But I have a residency at a jazz venue here every Tuesday called Elephant Room. And I play probably at least half the songs that we play every Tuesday are my own.
Okay.
But we also, like, straight up play real jazz.
real jazz.
So this, like, whatever is real, you know, like.
It's in the real book, so it's real jazz.
Well, I say that because my players are, like, the sickest jazz players in Austin, but they're versatile enough to be able to also play everything else. My guitar player was Leonard Cohen's guitar player, okay, and band leader from, like, the 70s until his last concert. So he's just, like, exquisitely amazing. And so when we play a jazz standard, it's legit. But when we play my stuff, it's also, you know, we make it all fit in that room.
Right.
So this third EP is way more what you think of, like, you know, even if it's a songwriter thing, it's more like a Norah Jones type of songwriter song. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. Cool. So we're talking about, you got a new one coming out and then possibly two more in this cycle. So what does the next 6 to 12 months look like for you? I mean, I know you have kids and everything. You think you're going to be doing any traveling, any touring? What do you think coming up?
I don't have that. I'm just starting to map that, but it is time, and I'm finally going to get outside of Austin again. And I think the model that we're kind of have in mind is to just do these quick trips. Like, if we go to New York for the weekend, then we would play the living room and we would play somebody's house concert, and, you know, maybe also do, like, a serious jazz gig, and have them be real different shows, but just concentrate on, like, one city at a time and then come back, because I cannot ask my players in their current, you know, quality of life and the type of touring they've done previously to live out of a van with me. It's just not going to happen.
There's a point, I think there's a point of where you don't want to do that. I've talked to many artists. Today's scene is completely different than it was, like, in the 70s and 80s, for sure. And there's a lot of artists who really kind of don't even get started until after they retire from their day gigs. And, this allows them to have a freedom to really concentrate on what they're doing. But nobody at that stage in life wants to go, like, sleep on pool tables and stuff like that. So they're doing kind of what you're doing. You know, they're doing these like sort of mini trips, you know, over the weekend, or like taking long weekends here and there, and, you know, kind of doing it that way, as opposed to, you know, schlepping it out on the road for 18 months straight, you know, playing 1,000 gigs or whatever, you know.
The truth is, I would do that if I had enough infrastructure, you know, and enough success for everybody to be comfortable, but no.
I got you.
We are.
I know. And right. We're in a little different stage nowadays. So cool. So you're going to be doing some of these trips. Where can people, you know, stay in touch with you and hear everything that's going on, so they don't miss, because you've got a lot of music coming out, and make sure that they don't miss if you're coming to their city?
Well, I still do a newsletter. I mean, it only goes out, like, quarterly, but it's on sarahsharp.com at the bottom of the page.
Okay.
People can join it, and I always, you know, give people, like, they get to hear stuff first, or get kind of inside scoop on stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I keep pretty up to date on my website and Facebook and Instagram.
What is the web? I'm trying to get you to say the website.
It's Sarah Sharp. www.sarahsharp.com. Sarah with an H, Sharp, no E.
Excellent. Okay. So sarahsharp.com, Sarah with an H, no E. And that's where you guys can, and there's all the jumping off points there to the social media stuff. Is there one social media place you're more active than others, or no?
I mean, I enjoy Instagram more than anything.
Okay. So good.
I mean, it includes some of my family stuff, my kids stuff, but it also includes my artistic stuff. There's a lot I share on Instagram that I would never share anywhere else.
Oh, wow. Okay, guys. Well, now you've heard it. So when you go to sarahsharp.com, get on and click the little Instagram button at the bottom there, and you'll get all hooked up, and you'll get all the personal stuff, too. So very good. So, all right, Sarah, thanks so much for taking a little time today and telling us about your life and your journey. It's been and I'm looking over over the notes I have for you. And I know we didn't touch that. There's a lot more to you. So maybe in a year or so, when you got more stuff coming out, maybe we could sit down and kind of pick up on what we didn't get a chance to talk about here. But thanks a lot for being around today. I need to wrap up the podcast. Can you hang out for a minute? I need to do a little business with you when we're done. You got a minute?
Sure.
Excellent. Okay, guys, Sarah Sharp has been our guest today. What an amazing journey. So, and you can find out more about Sarah and keep abreast of everything she has going on at sarahsharp.com. There's videos there. You can stream some of the music there as well. So you can check that out at sarahsharp.com. You've been listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Our website is ludinirockandrollcircus.com. Check back often for more great podcasts with a wide variety of artists. The ones that you like, please share them around. Let the world know what's the music that's important to you. And hopefully you get your friends involved and you help these artists grow their fan bases. Just by sort of paying it forward. And you can do that all at LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. Okay, we've whittled away yet another podcast time. I appreciate you guys hanging out with us. I'm sure Sarah does too. So remember to check her out at SarahSharp.com. And we'll catch you all next on the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.